You're on Team Human, Conscious Intervention in the Machine. Yes, exactly that. Conscious Intervention in the Machine. In an age when our machines offer to think for us, we had better at least feel for ourselves. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, and I'm on Team Human. I'm delighted to introduce you to our newest supporting sponsor, a Team Human enabler in more ways than one, Groucho. Groucho is a platform that answers the most common question we get at Team Human. How do I find the others? Well, this is it. Go to mygroucho.club/teamhuman. Share your interests and aspirations, and Groucho's curators will hand assemble a real dinner club for you. You meet twice a month in order to establish some lasting friendships. Groucho takes care of all the logistics. The thing I like is that it was built by artists, not tech pros. People who wanted to recreate what they got from artist residencies, curated intentionally, and with time and space to connect. That's how the founders met their own best collaborators, friends, and even life partners. So check out mygroucho.club/teamhuman for 50% off the first month. That's mygroucho.club/teamhuman. Find the others. So I want to talk today about spidey sense, inner knowing, trusting the gut and not letting evidence distract us from what we know to be true. Artificial intelligence and other technologies, they suck in many ways, but they are good at revealing this distinction, but maybe not in the way we think. I know these monologues have been a little heavy lately. Well, if not heavy, at least really deep. So let me tell you a story that's not so gut-wrenching for me, although I imagine it is for the person I'm talking about. I don't generally use real names of people I'm criticizing, not unless they're presidents or billionaires. Back when I wrote Siberia, my gonzo ethnography of the San Francisco cyberdelic scene, I held back from critiquing anyone too hard because they were all young and earnest with great intentions. But I followed that book up with a novel called Ecstasy Club so I could tell the deeper, darker truths about what I was seeing without ridiculing anyone in particular. So I'm going to leave out names here while still telling a true story. So you can always do searches if you simply have to know, but I want to offer you the opportunity to consider not doing that or posting links in the comments area about, oh, it's this, it's that. Just let the story do its thing without necessarily tying it to anybody in particular. There's no real good reason to bother with that. So I feel like I'm getting a reputation as someone who's against AI, like some AI curmudgeon. And I really don't think I am. I'm not. And I'm not just saying this for fear of the future AI robot overlords that are going to parse these words, determine I'm antagonistic to their goals, and then have me eradicated or audited, right? No. I feel okay about using it for some of the stuff I don't want to do, like organizing files or whatever, but not the real stuff, not the things I want to do or that are going to represent me in the world or anybody else for that matter. You know, what I'm against, what has always irked me is grift. Right? Maybe that's too strong a word because I don't mean it in its original illegal con artist sense, so much as people who exploit a cause to get financial gain, or influencers, or pundits who play off people's insecurities or rage or greed to get followers. In Generation X, we equated selling out with becoming a grifter, trading soul for sales, surrendering to getting a job, not a temp job or working in a cafe, but like a job in a career path, like an investment banker or advertising executive, you know? And that means I may be a drop oversensitive to this stuff, right? You know, tagging every business book or advertising agency as a form of grift just because it's got primarily a profit motive. You know, I feel guilty for speaking at a conference called the House of Beautiful Business because the oxymoron of beautiful business feels like something out of the grift factory, right? You can do exploitive capitalism, but save the world, right? We'll make you feel good about your worst externalities. But something happened that has really clarified all this for me. The difference between people doing stuff for money, which is really fine, and people compromising their integrity for money, which is something else entirely. Now, all right, so here's the story. I had agreed to do an interview for a guy. Let's call him Dave, who was writing a book about how AI was going to impact our relationship to truth. It was a typical one-hour Zoom call where I answered pretty typical questions about what we should use AI for and what we shouldn't. And I told some stories, used some examples, and then went on about my life. Maybe a month or two later, shorter than the usual time for a person writing a book, he sent me the final galley of the book, hoping I would support the publication. He added, this is a quote, "As a note on process, our interviews were conducted on Zoom, and I worked carefully from the transcripts to represent our conversations accurately and in context. I hope your voice comes through clearly and adds an important perspective to the larger conversation about truth." So I immediately went to my chapter to check on my quotes and see how accurate the transcripts he said he was working from had been. And all my quotes were way off, right? There was one about preventing theater from being made, and another where I was insisting on the importance of ground truth. I mean, what's ground truth? They were all either something I disagreed with or something I wouldn't say using those words. So I emailed him right away, telling him that his transcription program, probably Descript, which is what most of us use, it must have made some errors, right? I said, I think if you listen to the audio, you'll be able to hear what the correct words actually are. And he replied, we should get on the phone to walk through my notes and get them cleaned up. And I replied, I explained, I can't really walk through the notes without a recording of some kind, you know, to know what I said. Do you have that? I can listen to the recordings, try to find the places you quoted from, and then tell you what I actually said. You know, I told him it was a really busy time, and I'd even have to cancel someone else to make time for this. But I would if we just do it. And so back and forth and back and forth we went, with me asking for transcripts that had my quotes or misquotes, and Dave obfuscating in one way or another, sending me audio files and formats I couldn't open. And eventually, I open the files, use Descript to turn them into text, and search for the quotes and can't find anything close. Until finally, after me spending a couple of hours on this guy's book for him, he replies to one of my emails and says, well, I did take a look at the text and bibliography, so it may have come from one of your other works, and it may be a paraphrase that's getting us stuck. What? It may have come from one of your other works, and it may be a paraphrase that's getting us stuck? Duh. Like, I know you got it way before me, right? The guy wrote the book with AI. I looked back at the manuscript. Now, all the wording, the organization, the analyses, they all read like AI. Jesus, I didn't know what to do anymore. All right, fix the quotes so this book doesn't misrepresent me, or drop out entirely. And so most importantly, his email went on, is that this book accurately represents your thinking. So it's probably easier to change the quote than to hunt for it. After all, you're the author of your ideas. The author of my ideas, at least that makes one of us, right? So like a fool, I read the whole chapter and created new quotes from me that fit the argument his AI had constructed for me to tell, right? Not great ones, but at least they were the kinds of things I would have actually said. I put them in an email holding back my rage, but then offering my heartfelt warning. AI does not produce real quotes, and this way of working could come back to bite you, particularly in a book that's supposed to be about the way AI can distort the truth. I was so deflated, right? Disgusted. I told one friend in confidence, someone else who had been questioning this guy's virtuous empire all along, but then I just held my tongue. I've done well enough speaking and writing my truth myself not to begrudge those who take a different path. And then a few months go by, and the book finally comes out with all the accolades of an important work, endorsed by UN leaders and digital luminaries. He even got a Nobel Prize-winning journalist to write the preface. And within a week, the friend to whom I disclosed all that stuff sent me a text, and it was a link to a New York Times article about the book. Book on Truth in the Age of AI contains quotes made up by AI. A couple of people in the book had complained that their quotes were inaccurate and told the Times, right? And the Times writers concluded that the book had, quote, misattributed and invented quotes scattered throughout. And Dave had said he told the Times that he had no intention of fabricating any viewpoints. Of course, that's not the problem here. It's that he chose to let ChatGPT fabricate the words we use to express our viewpoints because finding actual quotes would require actual work. And it turns out ChatGPT could not fabricate our perspectives in ways that are recognizable to us. Then in a statement written by someone or something, he told the paper he was, quote, now working with the editors to thoroughly review and quickly correct any affected passages. Any future editions will be corrected, right? Well, may as well just start over and write it with a keyboard. And all this from an author who's positioning himself as an expert on truth in the age of AI. And there's a lesson in all this, for me especially, and maybe not the one you think. You know, sure, it's a case study in how not to use AI. It's the lesson my freshman students learn when they turn in a paper with citations that don't actually exist because of Claude's inability to generate real quotes from sources they haven't manually submitted. Claude puts the lines in quotation marks, but they're just guesses based on summaries. On the first offense, I just circle the quotes, tell them to find real ones. Even if Claude writes the paper for them, at least they get exposed to the original text as they hunt for supportive quotes. But the lesson for me was different. It had to do with enthusiastic consent and trusting my own sense of when and why to participate in something. It's not that I should have known better. It's that I did know better. What tech taketh away, it can also giveth back. Think about it. We've handed our social lives over to platforms designed to keep us clicking, not connecting, turned human relationships into follower counts and reaction metrics. Our new favorite sponsor, Groucho, is a corrective. Founded by artists who want to flip the script, instead of atomizing us like a social network, they connect people in real life. Human curators place you in a local club with people who complement your interests and your journey. Share evenings out with your club twice a month until real connections take hold. Then, the people at Groucho place you into a new hand-assembled club for the social fabric to grow. Groucho wasn't built by tech bros, but artists who wanted to recreate the serendipity of their own art residencies, where they found lifelong collaborators, friends, even life partners. So come on, Team Human, let's find the others. Go to mygroucho.club/teamhuman for 50% off the first month. That's mygroucho.club/teamhuman. Right, let me give you some of the backstory. Like a year or two ago, I got a phone call from Dave, who was an acquaintance in the tech for good world. I've seen him at some conferences, and maybe I've been on a panel with him. Nice enough guy, talks the talk, and networks really well. He goes to a lot of events, I think, because I only go to a few events. Whenever I do, I see him there, right? He's part of the growing list of people and organizations dedicated to democratizing the internet, preventing harms, and promoting human values. All of them compete for the same funds from the same shrinking lists of billionaires and foundations who don't yet think of fascism as the worst path for the future of our country. So Dave calls me from out of the blue. He was let go as executive director of a media nonprofit and looking for something else to do that could replace his six-figure salary. My heart went out to him. I know what it's like to have kids in school and every day thank the fates for my professor gig at CUNY, which gives me fuck you privileges to gigs I don't want to do. But more importantly, it obligates me to take a hell yes or no approach to offers. Not that anyone should do stuff they don't feel right about, but I've actually been put in a position to survive without doing it. Dave had come up with a phrase, a name for a new nonprofit media organization, but he had no idea of what it could actually be or do. He wanted to know what I thought that phrase indicated and what the foundation might do, what the nonprofit could do, what need it could address, and how it could do it. So, you know, rather than starting with a need he identified in the world, he started with a name he thought could raise money. First clue of grift in the making. You know, I didn't have a lot for him, and he wanted to know if I would be on the board. Of what? I asked. There's no thing, I said. Exactly, he replied. That's why I need you. Right? He wanted to know if I'd please come to a Zoom meeting to help figure it out. I told him I would, just to get him off the phone and get on with my work. And that's when the email started. Right? Oh, I saw you were going to Dave's Zoom meeting. I wouldn't have agreed, but when I saw your name, I figured, right, classic. Use one name to get another and another until you have some genuinely important people there. You know, I showed up as I said I would and pondered the luminaries and the little their little Zoom squares as the inane conversation went on, right? 20 digerati in search of a cause for Dave to tag with his new nonprofit's name. And I didn't attend any others, and I didn't let him use my name as a board member in spite of ongoing high-pressure requests. I got invited to some events. I even went to a dinner, which made my stomach turn, when a young advisor just out of high school was honored and asked to speak about the harms of social media. You know, she was eloquent, but in that pandering way high-achieving young people use when they're learning to play the game, you know, the combination of conformity and precociousness that have turn the Ivy League schools into such monumentally boring institutions. Still, more luminaries and dignitaries joined the organization, which was purportedly about protecting kids from all the ills of social media. You know, all I could see were lots of Zoom meetings and dinner parties, but at least Dave had a job. I figured all these folks must see and know something that I don't. Maybe just being a Gen X curmudgeon and letting perfect be the enemy of better than nothing. I was misreading the whole thing. So when Dave called to interview me for the book, this book on how AI will distort the truth, I said yes. You see, instead of listening to my own gut, to whatever it is inside me that let me become whoever it is I've become by now, I looked at the outward signs, the names and positions of the people who were now supporting this organization. I knew what it was and wasn't, but some part of me feared I'd missed the boat. You know, worse, I told him I'd join his board. There must have been 50 people on it by now, right? My absence felt almost conspicuous to me. So when the manuscript came back and I saw it was an AI-generated pile of grift, I realized my own participation in this fiasco came from the same strategic energy and insecurity as Dave. right? It was a lazy delegation of my judgment to a symbol system, combined with a fear of missing out. I was not behaving in a way that was aligned with my own integrity. Now, I don't begrudge Dave for what he did, or anyone from grifting or compromising when they have to. It's hard out there. We can't all do jobs we like or even work on assignments we agree with. We're often cogs in companies whose impacts we disdain. Sales clerks at the Gap upselling items customers don't need, or health insurance claims adjusters looking for ways of denying claims. It would be nice if everyone had the liberty of living true to their deepest convictions, but most of us don't. But there are certain kinds of work, of creation, of interaction that do demand we rise to the occasion. And AI really helps us distinguish them. What would you relegate to AI and why? And what does that say about your relationship to the task itself? You know, someone who uses AI to bang out reports or organize folders or even do a meta-analysis on some data sets, there's no problem with that. But to write a novel, a letter to a lover, or to substitute for the human judgment someone is paying you for? That's over the line. I mean, writing a book is hard and time-consuming, but that's the job. You know, and while it's bad enough to misrepresent an AI's writing as one's own words, it's even worse to represent an AI's fabrication as someone else's words. Besides, we gave our time and words. They're all recorded. Just feed those into the agent so the AI can use direct quotes in the book you have it write for you. At least give the AI what it needs to do right by us. But that's Dave's problem. I've got my own, which is that I didn't trust my own spidey sense that the whole enterprise was a grift. I wasn't in it to help him out, but to make sure I wasn't left out of what I mistook for an important project. It was ego. It was FOMO. I wanted to be associated with the big names. That's how a confidence game always works. The mark thinks they're getting something. As we move into a world with more simulations, more fabrications, and more permutations of the grift they engender, it's going to become all the more important that we trust what our bodies are telling us. We know. We always know. Deep down inside us, we really do know. We can go against that voice, the expression of our will, our actual soul when we have to. Gotta eat, gotta protect the family, gotta pay rent, or if you're lucky, mortgage. Gotta keep a job. Our civilization was built this way in part to get us to do stuff we know is wrong, to externalize discomfort, to see other human beings as less important than us and as instruments for our own survival. Our president and our billionaires do it, so why shouldn't we? Because it'll kill your soul. You don't have to die on the sword of your own integrity, but there are ways to navigate this terrain. The object of the game, particularly when you have degrees of latitude to play, is to keep the meaningful stuff in-house, in heart. Our books, our art, our institutions of care, these are not of that realm. They're the stuff for God, not for Caesar. It's funny, I have certain people that I use as like warning signals. People I've met at one thing or another, done a panel with them or observed them in a professional setting and gotten a really bad feeling about. Not that they're evil or dangerous, just that they're off or misaligned, at least compared to or in relation to my map, to my mission. And after a couple of times, a couple of confirmations, I start to use them as negative indicators. Like if there's a party or a conference and I see they're going, I take it as a sign from the fairies or the universe that I shouldn't attend. or maybe a startup asked me for some advice and I'm trying to figure out if it's worth the time, that may mention that they're also talking to one of my negative indicators. That's my cue. Their presence is like a gift, a warning sign like thin ice or road curves ahead. It's that clear. The universe is that clear. And it's not that we have to spend extra effort to see these things. We all see them all the time. The effort comes in actually listening to what our hearts, our bellies are telling us when they do. There's no shortcut. We have to learn to obey ourselves. Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for being on Team Human. We're produced by Joshua Chapdelin and edited by Luke Robert Mason. You can help us out a lot by going to patreon.com/teamhuman and becoming a supporting member of the team. You'll get free access to our Discord, to our live premieres that we do now. With some of these shows, we do a live premiere and then an hour video chat afterwards where I'm there answering questions and talking about stuff with y'all. You can come to live events when we do them and get the ad-free version of this show. But most importantly, just help us keep this thing going. It matters to me, and I hope it matters to you. Thanks for being here on Team Human. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, and you've been on Team Human, our last best hope for peeps.